Well, hello everyone, and welcome to the pre-penultimate Fantasy 4-1 for the 2013 Major League Baseball season. I am JB, back here alongside Corey Schwartz in our studios. I would say somewhere between the Today Show and the Super Bowl is how our studios play. If you haven't seen them on video, trust me, they're phenomenal. Corey and I have them to ourselves right now, and we're going to bring you some fantasy knowledge. It's September, so dogfights or looking forward to next year is all that's left, Corey.
Yeah, pretty much. And just to capitalize or to leverage one thing you just said, this is the pre-penultimate show. Penultimate being next to last. This being the next to next to last. After today, today's our last phone interview of the year.
Yay!
We'll have Paul Sporer on
later on.
Yeah. Next week, Mike and I will do the all surprise, all disappointment teams and take some Q&A from the fans talking about how their seasons went. So tweet in your questions. And then in the final week of the season, we will have a podcast where we will announce the all-fantasy teams for this year, which probably won't be a ton of surprises, and we'll take as many Q&As from the fans, from the listeners, from the podcasters as we can possibly get, and then we'll ride off into the sunset for the 2013 championship season. So, that being said, I hand it back to you.
Here's what we're going to do on the next roughly, who knows, 7.5 hours. September previews, you know, the young players that are getting a long look and whether you should be looking at them too. Those who are hurt and whether there is one or two at-bats in there that can save your season and finally shut it down. These guys are done. Are they also done for 2014? That is what is coming up. Then we'll bring in Mr. Sporer. We'll answer your questions. Your ear holes will be filled with joy and happiness. Here's what we go with the previews. Yosmiel Pinto, getting a long look in September. Corey, break it down.
There is nothing in fantasy so sweet as a catcher that can hit. And the only thing sweeter than that is a guy who can hit who's masquerading as a catcher. And that's what Pinto is for the Twins. Wasn't really viewed as much of a prospect a couple of years ago. No one thought he would stick at catcher. He's got, you know, the quote-unquote bad body. Doesn't really look very athletic. But a funny thing happened. In 2012, he started hitting 295 with 14 homers. This year, 309 with 15 homers. They bring him up when Mauer gets the concussion and Domet was banged up, and he starts hitting. He's 14 for 30. He doesn't strike out a lot. He has a good plate discipline, 5 strikeouts and 3 walks in this small sample size. And the key thing is you're looking for at this time of year. You throw the names out the window. You're looking for playing time. Mauer is very slow to come back from that concussion. We'll get to that in a little bit. And the Twins have already said that Ryan Domet will not catch anymore this year. So Pinto is the guy for the rest of the year. And over the last 17 days, to find a catcher who can hit on the waiver wire is a big, big boost. So I've got him in NFBC where I'm in a dogfight, as you said, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, there you go, Pinto. Ride the Pinto. This one might not explode.
Nice.
You have to be really old to get that reference.
I just got it.
The rest of you kids,
nice one.
Google it. You'll figure out what I'm talking about. Chris Owings, do we like him? Want him in the roster? Looking forward to next year? What's the deal?
I love Chris Owings. This guy is just absolutely a hitter. This year at AAA Reno, 330, 12 homers and 20 steals. Really, you only have two concerns about Owings. Number one is the plate discipline. For his minor league career, 6 strikeouts per walk. This year, it was 4.5 strikeouts per walk. That's an improvement, but that's still not very good. So he's got power. He's got some speed. He's got 2 steals already in limited playing time for the D-backs. But you've got to love his overall offensive game if he can overcome that poor plate discipline. And now, what I just alluded to in the limited playing time, the other concern is playing time. The D-backs have Didi Gregorius, who is the centerpiece of the Trevor Bauer deal, and they still have Cliff Pennington, who they traded for with Oakland in the Chris Young deal. So who's going to play shortstop the rest of the way is an interesting dilemma. The D-backs right now are on life support in the NL wildcard race. My guess is they're going to continue to mix up the at-bats over the next couple of days, but if and when they're eliminated or they just fall out of contention realistically, I think you're going to see a lot more of Chris Owings. I think Kirk Gibson is very intrigued by this guy, wants to see what he can do. In 12-team mixed leagues, you're not going to pick up a guy who's not playing every day. But in NL-only leagues, keeper leagues, this guy ought to be picked up right now. In NL-only leagues, in 14, 15-team leagues, you really need to keep an eye on him because he could see a lot more playing time in the last 2 weeks, and you've got to like that power-speed combination playing in a good hitter's park in the desert.
Big time for Owings, then. We like that a lot. What about Tommy Meds?
Tommy Medica making the jump from AA for the Padres. It looks like help me out here.
The first baseman. For whom?
Yonder Alonso. Sorry. You're looking at me, and I'm like, Yonder Alonso. Say it. Anyway.
Yes. Baseball.
Alonso is probably out for the year at this point, yes. So Medica gets the call. He's only played 76 games above A-ball, but again, a big-time hitter. .296 with 20 homers in 81 games this year. Last year, in only 93 games, .330 with 19 homers. So you're talking about a guy who's shown 35 to 40 home run power and the ability to hit for average. Decent plate discipline, about a 2-to-1 strikeout to walk rate. We'll have to see, you know, obviously how well he handles the jump from essentially A ball. He's only had a half season above A ball going into that very tough hitter's park. But the key thing is he's going to play. So deeper leagues, if you're looking for a power bat and you want to, you know, if you've got that flyer, you want to make it this time of year, Tommy Medica is a guy to watch.
Tommy Meds, Anthony Gose.
Yeah, Anthony Gose isn't really, you know, as young a prospect as some of these guys. He's been kicking around for a couple of years,
yes.
But 76 steals and 70 steals in his two best minor league seasons. That's got to be very intriguing. In 2011, he developed some power, hit 16 home runs. The problem is he's another guy with very, very poor plate discipline. In 93 major league games between last year and this year, 79-21 strikeout to walk rate, only a .223 hitter. But here's the thing. He's going to play. Colby Rasmus has been out for a while. He may be back this weekend, but We'll have to see about that. Bautista's out for the year. Encarnacion is banged up. There's some talk he may be out for the year. We'll get to that in a little bit. So there is an opportunity here for Anthony Gose to see a lot of at bats down the stretch. And he's one of those guys that, you know what, he may only hit .223, but if he gets on 6 or 7 times in a week, you might get 2 steals out of that. And this time of year, that makes all the difference.
And speaking of speed, as if on cue, young Mr. Hamilton.
Yeah. You don't need to worry about this guy hurting your batting average. You don't need to worry about, oh, am I going to get any power from him? Billy Hamilton's here to do one thing, and he going to do it.
Yeah.
He's appeared in 5 games for the Reds so far. He's only had 2 at-bats. They're
awesome.
Using him basically as a pinch runner. But he's already scored 3 runs and had 4 steals. If you get 3 runs and 4 steals every week from any player, you want that guy in your lineup. Hamilton last year, or was it the year before when he had, you know, 150 steals?
Yes.
We have this number, stolen base opportunities, you know, stolen base percentage. How many times the guy is on first base by a walk, hit by pitch, or a single?
Right.
And how many times he attempts to steal a second?
Yes.
An aggressive base stealer will be 25 to 30%. Hamilton last year over the minors was something like 80%.
Yes.
Meaning, literally, when he gets on first base, he's going to run. He's going to steal the base. If he's available in any league, you need to pick him up if you need steals.
Which leagues?
All of them. Like Schwarzenegger going in to buy all the guns. So, phased plasma rifle and 40-watt range. What's it going to be?
All of them. Billy Hamilton, go get him. Tanner Roark. It's like an internet meme right there. Tanner Roark.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Got to make fun of the guy's name?
No. The kids would say they get it. Trust me.
Okay, all right.
It's derp.
Yeah, and, you know, Roark is sort of like Gose. He's not a huge prospect. He's going to be 27 in October, but he had a very good year this year in AAA, 9-3, 3.15 ERA, kind of swinging between relief and the bullpen. Comes up to the Nationals, gets 4 vulture wins in his first 9 relief outings, so they put him in the rotation. What's he done? He was 5 in relief.
Uh-huh.
In his first 2 outings, he's gone 6 innings each. He's now 6-0 with a 1.38 ERA, 26-8 strikeout to walk rate in 34 and 2/3 innings, with 0 homers allowed. 0, JB.
Zero. How many?
0.
0.
Now, he's kind of a fly ball pitcher.
In Espanol and Italiano.
Zero. So he's going to give up a few homers. He's got the Braves next. They're a team that will strike out a lot and hit a lot of homers. But again, good pitcher's park, good strikeout numbers, doesn't hurt himself with the walk. And, you know, again, this is the time of year when we're talking about shutdowns.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of pitchers get shut down. Roark hasn't really been in the rotation all year, whether in the minors or the majors. So he can go to the very end and make those 3 starts over the next 2 weeks. So, again, where you're looking for pitching, throw the names out the window and grab the guys who are producing. And Tanner Roark is one of those guys.
Roark. Con! Discuss these injured guys, as we will. And this is what we're going to look at. We're going to look at rest of the season.
All right.
And then 2014.
Right. Mostly ROS.
ROS. D. Wright.
All right. David Wright has been out since August 2nd with that strained hamstring. He's been working out. He's picking up the pace. He might be back as soon as Tuesday at home versus San Francisco. I would guess more likely in Philadelphia next weekend. You know, look, the Mets are out of it, obviously.
Yes.
They have no incentive to bring Wright back from the standpoint of wins and losses. But they've got to show some good things to that fan base. You know, Matt Harvey's hurt. It's been a very disappointing year. You've got to get David Wright back on the field and energize that fan base. You know, look, David Wright's one of those guys. It doesn't matter how rusty he's in. You're putting him in your lineup if and when he comes back. The thing you have to watch out for, though, he was running a lot before he got hurt. 17 steals, on pace for his most steals since 09. You've got to figure he's not going to come back as a factor in stolen bases. So get that out of your thinking. But if you get even 10 days of David Wright, who can hit for average and bang out a couple of home runs, you want that. So next season, I think he's probably, you know, the number two, number three, third baseman off the board behind Miguel Cabrera. This year was, even with the injuries, I think this year revitalized his value.
There you go, E5.
Well, you know, we think he's coming back, but we're not sure. He's been out since September 7th with a sore wrist. John Gibbons said on Wednesday, Encarnacion was out for the season, so we were going to put him in the operation shutdown category. And then Edwin Encarnacion takes batting practice and says, I'm not going anywhere. I'm coming back. So you got to figure they'll probably split the difference. He'll come back if the health allows him, if the wrist allows him, and there's no chance of reaggravation. You know, again, Edwin showed this year, even if he misses the last 2 weeks of the season, last year was not a fluke. He's not going to equal last year's numbers, but he showed it's not a fluke. He is a late second round guy, very stable right now. You're not going to feel like you're taking a big leap grabbing him. 35 homers, 8 to 10 steals is what he's going to be worth. Very solid year for Encarnacion.
E5. My, how we love it. We talked about driving the Pinto and why you might be doing that. It's because Joe Mauer's concussion is slow to heal.
Yeah, and
concussions heal. That's not the right phrase, but you know what I mean.
Recover
from a concussion.
Or rebound from.
So his brain is still sloshing around in his noodle.
Yeah, so, you know, baseball is a zero-sum game. As long as Mauer is out, that's good news for Pinto. But the reality is there's been so much talk about Mauer moving out from behind the plate. And when he suffered this concussion, Ron Gardenhire said it again. As of Wednesday, Mauer tried to work out and was still feeling those symptoms, lightheadedness, dizziness, so forth. He worked out yesterday, Thursday, and felt better, like Encarnacion. Maybe they were working out together.
Hey, who knows?
Who knows? So again, the key thing is they're going to bring him back slowly. They got no incentive to rush him. Looking at next year, he's clearly no longer the number one fantasy catcher, but he's in sort of that second tier. There are very few guys like him who can hit for a high average with a little bit of power and play a lot. The big issue for next year will be where does he play? You know, Morneau's out of town. He could move to first base as soon as next year.
Right.
But the key thing is for keeper value, he's still catcher eligible, and that's what you like.
You get that for at least one more season. Jacoby Ellsbury.
You know, I have a problem with people calling guys like Ellsbury injury prone.
Yes.
But it is a little frustrating that the guy's always injured, if you know what I mean.
It's true.
You know, he fouled a ball off his foot in Baltimore, was able to play, came out the next day against the Yankees a couple days later, three hits, the stolen base, the run. Hasn't played since. It turns out he's got a fractured bone in his foot.
Right, and that's what that's the injury prone idea. It's like he's pulled hamstrings.
Right, exactly.
He's broken ribs, broken bones.
I'd be more concerned about David Wright with a recurrent injury next year, because hamstrings, you know, that's when you say a strained muscle, that's a tear. It's at a micro level, but that's a tear, and that rebuilds itself with scar tissue.
Yes.
But it's never as strong as it was before.
And it changes the dynamic of that muscle.
Exactly. So the hamstring will get progressively weaker, and that will become more and more of an issue, hopefully in the long-term future, but not next year. Ellsbury, broken foot, you got to figure he's going to bounce back. He may be out for the entire season, but the way everybody's talking, the Red Sox are going to try and get him back out on the field, maybe to DH a couple of games, then play a couple games in the outfield. They can officially clinch a playoff berth as soon as Sunday, so they're going to need him in the postseason, so they're going to want to get him back. So, you know, in a weekly league, you're going to keep him on the bench this week. You probably have him there already. You're going to bench him again next week, but I'm putting him in my lineup for that last week of the season because he's going to want to test that foot. And again, sort of like we always used to say about Ricky Henderson, we said about David Wright, 4 or 5 games of Jacoby Ellsbury is worth 7 of most players.
Absolutely.
You're going to want him in there. So you're going to have to survive next week. But week 27, the last week of the season, when it's for all the marbles, you're going to have your big boy back in.
You definitely want him back in the line. What about the wrench, Alan Craig?
You know, he's still got a wrench in the works. No pun intended. See what I did there?
I did.
He's got the sprained ankle. Fortunately, nothing's broken, but he was examined yesterday, and he's going to be in that walking boot probably for another week. So he's got a shot to come back by the end of the season. And again, the Cardinals are in a battle right now for the NL Central crown. They're tied with the Pirates as of right now. They're going to want to see him back on the field, even if it's only in that last weekend series, to make sure they've got him for the postseason. You know, again, if you're in a weekly league, you're going to schedule without him for next week. I said week 27 because NFBC always counts that Sunday night game as a week. It's really the 26th.
Right, because it's only 26.
Let's call it the final week of the season.
The final, not the penultimate, but the final.
The final. Next week is penultimate. You're going to keep Ellsbury and Craig on the bench, but in the last week, you're going to look for those guys to come back later in the week.
And that is what you want. Big hitters at a big time. Matt Kemp.
Well, you know, he still is Matt Kemp. You know,
theoretically.
He hasn't played since July 21st.
Version 2 point something.
Only played 62 games this year, a variety of maladies. Tried to run a couple of days ago when the hamstring was still bothering him.
I love their third album, by the way, Variety of Maladies.
Maladies, yeah. That was the band that formed after Hook of the Hammett broke up.
That's right.
You know, again, the Dodgers, looking at the NL West, they can clinch as soon as Sunday. They're going to, Kemp, just like Ellsbury, just like Craig, the Dodgers are going to want to see him in the postseason. They're going to need him back in there. So look for him in the later part of the final week.
Of the final week, there you go, Matt Kemp. Howard Kendrick.
All right, finally, somebody who's actually going to play.
Yay!
In fact, you know, Kendrick's been out since August 5th with a sprained knee. Glad it wasn't any worse than that. He actually was activated from the DL on Tuesday, but they didn't want to use him in Toronto because of that hard turf. He will return to the lineup tonight in Houston, Friday night in Houston, and you've got to love it. He faces a lefty tonight and tomorrow night. That's a good way to come back, facing a lefty in Houston. Kendrick was having a great year, 301, 11 homers in 108 games. He's sort of like the situation with David Wright. You know, the Angels are out of it. From an on-the-field standpoint, there's no meaningful reason to have him in there, but Kendrick himself said, I'm not the type of guy to go out like that. I'm going to come back and I'm going to play. And there's been so much talk that the Angels were looking to trade him leading up to the trade deadline. He may be off-season trade bait, so everybody's going to want to see him healthy. I think everybody needs that. So let's say over the last 17 games of the season, or 17 days, he may not play every single day, but let's figure him two out of every three, three out of every four. As a middle infielder, definitely good enough to put in your lineup.
You definitely want that to help you out in the final dog hunt. Colby Rasmus alluded to him before in other stories. Now, what about now?
Yep, he's been out since August 11th with an oblique. That's what opened up all that playing time for Anthony Goes. He may be back this weekend against the Yankees, maybe back next week in Boston. But when he comes back, he'll play. You know, look, no Bautista, no Encarnacion, no Rasmus. That's opened up a lot of opportunities for the young guys like Goes and Moises Sierra. Yes. And Kevin Pillar, but at the end of the day, if Rasmus is back, he will play. Look, late burst of power, you're going to take it if you can get it.
Yeah, why not? What's the cost, really? Operation Shutdown, so we've talked about who's getting the look. We get to see them play, the guys that are banged up, whether or not they'll get time, whether they want to look forward to 2014. Now, let's simply look forward to 2014, because these guys have shut it down.
Yeah, there's some question marks, you know, Mauer and Kemp and guys like that. Are these guys going to come back? These guys are done.
This is it.
Done.
Let's start with the captain. What does it mean for 2014, the New York Yankees and the captain, Derek
Jeter? It's rough. Derek Jeter, I mean, by his own admission, a nightmare year. Only played 17 games, hit 190, just a lost year. You know, he's a guy whose draft day value has really fluctuated the last couple of years.
Certainly has.
This year, he went very, very late because, even though he had a good year last year, he broke the ankle during the playoffs. So everybody knew going into draft day that he was still hurt. Went on a lot of late-round flyers and didn't return it, but, of course, it was very low risk. Next year, I think it's going to be the same thing. I think he's going to be, you know, a late-round middle infield pick next year, maybe even in some shallower leagues, maybe even a reserve guy. But the thing you can count on from Jeter is that he's going to do everything he can to get back on the field. Is he a 290 hitter, a 260 hitter? Will he run at all? We really don't know, but I think he'll be back next year. So he's a guy that people are going to look at as a late-round flyer.
It's a late-round flyer, and it's still the captain. So Yankee homers are going. They're going in no matter what. So take advantage of that draft day, because you know you got one in your league. Jose Fernandez!
You know, I mean, the pitching numbers, it's kind of hard to, you know, 187-58 strikeout to walk rate in 172 and two-thirds innings.
Mm-hmm.
Only allowed 10 homers.
Yep.
219 ERA.
That's good.
He won 12 games for the Marlins.
He
think
did
about
indeed.
That. One of the worst teams in baseball, he won 12 games, not even making a full season start. The only question with Fernandez, there are really two things you have to be concerned about. You know, obviously the quality of the team around him, which is a question mark.
Yes.
And number two, how much he's going to pitch. This year, 172 and two-thirds innings. Let's bump him up into the 190s next year. Okay, let's give him a small increase. He's arguably a number one starter in fantasy baseball next year. He's not going to go in that sort of elite ace tier where typically the Kershaws and the Verlanders and the Strasburgs are going. But he could go in that next bunch where, you know, this year you saw a guy like Sabathia go, where you're sort of, you know, in a 12-team league, the fourth, fifth, sixth round guys. He's not going to go any later than that. And if they make some moves and try and improve the quality of that team around him, you know, if Stanton can get healthy and Christian Yelich, if they can find a couple more bats, that could bump him up a little bit. But I mean, literally, the guy did it all. Oh, and then for good measure, in his last major league start, hits a home run.
Yeah.
And triggers a bench-clearing brawl. So
that's everything you want.
That's doing everything.
That's doing it all.
Unbelievable talent. Very, very young. You've always got to be concerned about the injury risk. But, I mean, they shut him down before it could get bad. And you can't complain about it like last year with Strasburg. The Marlins had no reason to push him. Now, next year, you figure, 190 somewhere to 200, up that range. That's borderline number one starter material.
And just to be clear, that was 12 wins out of 54 for the Marlins. So he was roughly about 22% of their wins.
Not too
on
shabby.
On his own. So if they get one or two bats, then you add a win. All the peripherals are there. And you get the bench clearing balls down again, which is...
Right. And you get the hitting and the bench clearing
balls. If you get the special categories in your league, pay attention. Taiwan Walker.
Yeah, I mean, not as impressive as Fernandez, but still very, very, very strong stuff. 12-4 strikeout to walk in his last 15 innings. 160 strikeouts and 141 innings in the minors. He's pretty much done everything he needed to do to settle a spot in the Mariners' rotation for next year. Great fastball velocity. Showed a little bit of a cutter-slider type thing in there that he mixed in a little bit. So you see some secondary pitches. He's going to be in the Mariners' rotation next year. I think next year you'll probably look at him sort of like you did a Shelby Miller this year, a guy that if he had a good spring, you might jump up and take him as a 3. Ideally, you're looking at him as a 4, and if you get him deeper than that, you're really onto something. You know, again, about 160 total innings this year. Yeah. Next year, figure him for a 180 type of pitcher. That's perfect for a number 3, number 4 guy.
Love it. What about Jared Kosart?
You know, 195 ERA in 60 innings, that's nothing to turn your nose up at or
it
to
is
sniff
not.
At or to sniffle at.
To spit upon.
But, you know, more walks than strikeouts. 33 strikeouts, 35 walks, and he didn't have great strikeout-to-walk numbers in the minors. Barely 2-to-1 strikeout-to-walk rate in the minors. So you have to have some concerns about Kosart.
Yes, you do.
Even though he put up a lot of innings this year, was very effective, the underlying metrics aren't as good. He's got a lot of movement on his fastball. It's more of a cutter than a straight four-seamer. He might be having problems commanding that, but if you like pure stuff, this is still a guy to watch. Like with Walker, like with Fernandez, you've got to be concerned about the quality of the team. Unlike those two, you've got to be concerned about the ballpark. He pitches in the American League. All these are concerns, but stuff-wise,
there was
a lot to like here.
But you're a little bashful come 2014. Those underlying numbers are not particularly nice. And as some fans of the Indians have said on Bucks on the Pond, what about Nasty Masty?
Yeah, I don't know if we should put him in the coming back category or the shutdown category.
Right.
He's been out since September 2nd with an oblique. Colby Rasmus has been out since August 11th with the oblique.
Wow.
Masterson played catch earlier this week. He's going to try and play catch again soon. I think they'd like to get him one more start before the end of the season to set up for a potential playoff berth. They're still in a battle for the wild card. But if there's a risk that he's going to re-aggravate that, they'll probably have to shut him down out of caution. So he's a toss-up right now. He's been cut in most leagues, but keep an eye on this situation in case you get one more start out.
That's right. That would be a nice little surprise way to snatch your league back, to grab it from the jaws of defeat, from the maw of defeat with one start out of Nasty Masty. That would be spectacular.
Hey, you know
what? Let us know if it happens.
I mean, think about it. How many leagues have been decided by one stolen base, by one home run, by one strikeout? If you've got an opportunity to get a guy like this, even for 5 innings on September 28th, you're doing it.
And you will have proven your fantasy baseball superiority, proving his superiority in all things baseball. From Baseball Prospectus, Paul Sporer is joining us on the indispensable Paul Sporer will join us on the show right now. Paul, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, and thanks
good morning.
For being with us. How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys doing?
Terrific.
We're staring at the finish line of all these races.
It's nerve-wracking is what it is. I'm in contention in a couple. And I lost a big 7-point lead the other day. It was, and honestly, it's sour grapes, but it's more me losing than him winning. And if I don't win that league, I'm going to be really angry.
Yeah, and you know, that's what we were just talking about, that you play, I mean, think about it. You play all season, 2,400 major league games, and you can have a league decided by one steal, you know, one strikeout, one home run. It's, on one hand, it's exciting, but it's so frustrating to build everything and to go down to the wire that way and be like, I thought my team was good enough, and now I need one more strikeout to win, you know?
And
that's why it's so hard for me to play head-to-head, because you do play a full season, and then it comes down to a week. I get the excitement of it, and I've been more open to it of late, but, man, I cannot grind for 24 weeks, 25 weeks, and then come down to 7 days, and I've got 2 injured stars, and now I have no chance.
Yeah. I concur with that on the head-to-head for the 26-week experience.
Stings, man.
And then what I find about the pure style, the old-school style, is that you just, when you're that tight on the one stolen base or the one start or the one win or one or 2 points away, I usually think back to a week in mid-June or mid-July that I kind of phoned it in. And now, I'm like, oh, I didn't need to go to the beach for that extra hour. One more stat.
The Memorial Day weekend when you're out, you didn't do changes on that Monday. And you're like, right. Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Man, that's why I'm going to lose.
Now. I'll be fine. And then September, you
see,
think,
that's the thing. Like, I've always said I'd rather leave a good start on my bench than eat a blow-up.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, like, this week in NFBC, it's a weekly league, I benched John Neese because I thought he was going to pitch yesterday against the Nationals. They pushed him back, and he's going to get the Marlins today. And I'm going to race in all the pitching categories. I'm like, he hasn't even taken the mound yet, and I'm already dreading this.
He's clearly going to have 8 2/3, 0-0-1.
Nine strikeouts, one run allowed, big W. It's brutal.
Oh, the joys.
You know, Paul, since we're talking about pitching, you are the author of the Pitching Guide, which I think, as far as fantasy goes, is one of the indispensable resources. You were probably living a good life, having a good time. How did you get sucked into this world of pitching, which is the most frustrating thing?
Well, so actually, it started on a message board that Jason Collette, who I believe has been a guest on this show as well, a longtime friend of mine, we're both on, and a couple guys on the board started posting their top pitchers. And, you know, they put some good work into it and kind of started doing it. And I said, you know what, I want to do my list because I've got about 500 disagreements with them. And instead of just picking theirs apart, which I would still do, because, I mean, this is 10 years ago, I was an immature youth. Now I'm very, very, very mature. But I would first pick theirs apart, and I would do my own. And so that's basically how it started. It started on a message board. It was just Regis Long post on a board. Then I started posting it on PaulSport.com, and I started figuring, you know, people actually started expecting it in February or March. I said, you know what? This is the way to go here. And it kind of harkened back to a call. I don't know if either of you know Mark Haverty. He's a guy who's been in the industry from time to time. I was working on a venture with him, and we were getting on a phone call. Rick Wilton and I were the first two on the phone call, and I was talking to Rick. I was pretty new in the game, and as you guys probably know, he's injuries. I mean, that's his thing. And one of the things he told me is, you know, find a niche. As fun as it is to try to do everything and to be flexible, if you can find a niche, that's going to really help you. And that stuck with me forever. So it was about a year or two when I started the Starting Pitcher Guide. And, well, pitching can be my niche. I mean, it's still pretty vast, but if I can focus on it and actually really study it and try to get some knowledge behind it, that could be my niche. And so I've taken that route.
Yeah, I think, you make a great point there. And the thing I really like about the guide, and not to do the shameless plugs for you because you'll get that chance yourself, but, you know, you do a great job with the analytics and looking at swinging strike rates and all that sort of thing. And then in your work with Doug Thornburg, who really studies pitching mechanics, you're really taking a holistic view of pitchers. And, you know, I think the thing that people fail to recognize sometimes is when you say this pitcher has good or bad mechanics, you know, it doesn't mean that he will get hurt or that he will be ineffective, but you're trying to paint a complete picture and help people understand the risks and the pros and cons of various pitchers. And I think that, you know, what most people do in the fantasy industry is tend to speak in absolutes, and I think you guys paint a little bit more of a nuanced picture than that.
That's really what we were aiming for. Doug is my colleague at Baseball Perspectives. His knowledge on the mechanics and what he's taught me since we linked up, it's been immeasurable how wonderful it is. And I do think it's helpful to kind of know both sides of it. I'm very much against the stats versus scouts. It's stats and scouting. It has to be. I watch so many games. You know, I love the numbers, as you mentioned, but I also watch so many games to try to learn and figure out what's going on. You know, sometimes you look at the numbers. If you don't look at all of them, you miss things. Up until this year, I honestly didn't realize that Joe Kelly throws 95. I mean, he's got some legitimate stuff to kind of back up some of these good numbers that we've seen from him. But if you're not out there really watching games, I know everyone doesn't have time to watch games all the time, but any time that you can, you know, just add a game to your repertoire, you're watching your favorite team, but then you also got the Sunday afternoon TBS game, watch it. There's almost a guarantee you will learn something.
Yeah, I mean, I watch the Yankee games and I flip back and forth to MLB Network and watch MLB Tonight because they jump into games. So I'm not seeing any single game end to end, but I'm seeing dozens of different players and pitchers every night and getting, like you said about Joe Kelly, saw him pitch, I guess, against the Pirates maybe 10 days ago. And I knew he had a good sinker and a good breaking ball. And just as you said, I mean, perfect example. I was like, oh, this guy can bring it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
You know, it's
that's a great point with MLB Network. I mean, that's basically baseball's version of Red Zone, and they do an amazing job with it. They really do. It's not easy with baseball. Obviously, you got to go around and try to find the exciting moments, but they do a great job with it.
What's really phenomenal, too, is MLB.tv.
More shameless plugging.
It's a website. You guys might have heard of it. It's MLB.com.
Oh, yeah.
And if it's an out-of-market game, you can put it up in the quad mode. You watch four games at once.
I actually have that on both my computer and iPad.
Yeah.
I'm very, very pro MLB.
So you don't think I'm not a company man, JB, I have the TV on, the big screen, and I have my laptop going. Yeah. So I'm.
Paul, just so you know, that wasn't really for me. That was to protect Corey Schwartz. When the guys in the corner offices hear that he was pimping Secaucus so much, I had to make sure that Chelsea was getting the love, too.
What's good for baseball is good for BAM. You know what I'm saying? All right, let's get away from this topic very quickly. The thing we always ask, Paul, we've had a lot of great call-in guests this year. Colette, as you mentioned, you know, we always wonder, like, how'd you get into this? I mean, you talked about the pitching guide, but most of us didn't study or train or go to school, like, to become some fantasy baseball guy. Like, you fell into it somehow. I mean, was it really just being on the message boards? Like, what would you do if you weren't fantasy baseball guy?
Where were you
guy?
Headed yeah. before you took that right turn?
Well, so when I graduated college, I basically kind of took a year off to be a bum, and that was fun. And then I started working at Dell, which is here in Austin. It's in the suburb above Austin, but it kind of rules the town. And it was fine. It was good. But then I got laid off twice. The first time I got laid off, I took a job right after, so I stayed. Second time I got laid off, I said, you know what, this is getting kind of old. I will give baseball a shot. Didn't quite work that time, so okay, got to get another quote-unquote real job. Went back into the technology sector, software sales. It was pretty evident to these folks that I did not care about their software. I cared more about baseball. So I would be lying if I said I got laid off from there. I got fired. Probably deservingly so. So I said this time, I was like, okay, now I'm, you know, jobless again. Now it's really time to go. I'd been at Prospectus for a year, kind of started to get a little bit of a name under me. And I said, you know what, let's give this another go here. That's when I brought Doug on for the starting pitcher guide. I really aggressively sought some more freelance work. And I said, I'm going to try to make this be my full-time income, my full-time job. And I got a few. The daily fantasy edge of it, that part that's blowing up where you just do a lineup for a day, I was able to take advantage of that and write some pitching things at a couple different outlets. Also got on with RotoWire, a piece with them every week, plus Baseball Prospectus, plus the starting pitcher guide. All of a sudden, voila, bills are paid, cars gassed up, stomach's full, I've got a job.
Awesome. Nice.
So how did you start with Prospectus specifically?
I asked them. Can I be on your team? Do you need anybody? Do you need anybody that you know, need pitching openings? If not, I'll write about hitters. It's not like I don't pay attention to hitters when the games are going on. I reached out and I just said, hey, if you guys got an opening, I'd love to take a shot. That worked. And, obviously that sort of stuff's not always going to work, but I figured I'm never going to know if I don't ask. And they're not going to know about me if I don't at least put my name in the proverbial ring or my hat in the proverbial ring. And like I said, it worked. So there I was.
Yeah, there you go, kids. That is a lesson to be learned.
Great lesson for job seekers of all stripes. You got to go out and knock on doors.
Yeah, and know what you really love about it.
And if you ask and they say no, all right, you're no worse off than you were before, right?
I love the part of the story where you're at the software company and it's clear that you don't care.
Oh, God. And maybe the funny thing about that is it wasn't even baseball season yet. It was the off season. It was still obvious that I could not have cared less. Paul, wasn't even the worst on the team, statistically speaking. I was still kind of surprised that I got fired. But I think they maybe were doing me a favor saying, let's just get this guy out of here.
It's sort of like pulling you in four, you know, you had 4 2/3, you just needed one more out for the win, but it just wasn't happening.
It wasn't. It just was not happening. I mean, I walked two guys, all of a sudden we're looking bases loaded. It was bad.
Have a seat. All right. Well, thank you for. We love getting how this industry has grown over the last several years and the people that are a big part of that. And so now it's time to put the pedal to the metal and test your metal. Two start pitchers. We want your opinions on these guys that could help. And obviously, we are in the home stretch. So to be honest, Paul, of all the ones we've done this year, this is the only one that actually matters.
Right. This is the most important one. So
no pressure.
Well, I don't know if you guys know this, but I do write an article on two start pitchers at Baseball Prospectus. But I'm He's very well prepared for this.
Excellent. Awesome. I'm just going to shut up and let him roll.
That's right. Here we go. All right, Paul, we're going to start with Lance Lynn, who is at Colorado and at the Brewers.
You know what? If I'm following the Corey Schwartz model of I'm okay missing a good start rather than taking a beat up, I missed Lance Lynn this week because I benched him. I was just getting tired of his antics. And, of course, he goes out and throws six, quote-unquote, scoreless. It was one unearned run with 10 strikeouts. But honestly, that was his first good start in about a month. I cannot, in good conscience, send him out there in Colorado, let alone, you know, the rematch against Milwaukee could go either way. But honestly, I think there was a piece earlier this year beyond the box score that kind of analyzed these facing the same team within a week. And the second start was not better or worse. So I wouldn't suggest that based on the fact that he kicked their butts this week, that he would go out and do well against them. I just have no idea. The Colorado start is enough for me to actually fit him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think the caveat to all of these guys we're going to talk about is that this is a time of year for categories. So if you're chasing wins and strikeouts and you're okay in your ratios, then you're probably going to go for it. But we're thinking about the edge cases, you know, that, you know what, I really have a toss-up here. And I agree, you know, with everything Paul said, five straight starts of four-plus runs allowed before that big start against Milwaukee. Even without cargo, going into Colorado scares me, and that alone would be enough to scare me off this.
All right, have a seat, Lance Lynn. Dan Herron is at home against the Braves and at home against the Marlins. What do you say, Paul?
Man, anyone who benched him also had the same scenario of missing a good start. This is one of my favorite pitchers, and he has frustrated me to no end here. A lot of it, I think, has to do with kind of the back and hip, and we never really know when that's going to be a problem. I have a terrible back myself, and it's difficult for me to do things sometimes, and I don't do anything close to as important or excruciating as pitching in Major League Baseball. So I can't even imagine how he does it sometimes, and clearly he does it. Like 2 2/3, 7 earned against the Mets. I'm scared. For me, this is very much an edge case. If you're desperate, sure, but anything that isn't desperate, I can't risk it, even with the juicy Miami start sitting there.
Yeah, again, I agree. You know, and it's a very similar situation with Lynn. Great start last time out against the Mets, but in the previous three starts, 16 runs allowed. So you've got to look at the overall body work and not just that last one. You know, Atlanta is a team that will strike out a lot, but they can hit a lot of home runs. They've still got a lot of firepower. Very, very risky start, even with Miami, you know, waiting for you at the end of the week.
Looks like we're shying away from both those so far. Andy Pettit is at Toronto and at home against the Giants.
You know, Pettit's quietly been pretty great, or great maybe overstating it, but he's been pretty solid, more or less since the All-Star break. 3.50 ERA and 11 starts. 41 strikeouts, 16 walks, you know, just solid. Like I said, a couple of duds in there, a four earned run, and a real bashing in Chicago against the White Sox, 7 earned and 2 2/3. But other than that, he's been really strong. If you just kind of peel off that White Sox one, which happened on August 5th, and go from the 11th to the 11th, you got a 2.13 ERA and 7 starts. I'm going to go ahead and use him here. I think the old man is worth it.
Totally agree. I mean, two very favorable starts. Toronto banged up. San Francisco not a good hitting team. Totally agree.
All right, there we go. Our first starter, Andy Pettit. Rick Porcello is at home against the Mariners and at home against the White Sox. Paul, what do you say?
Porcello, this is his 28th start this year against the White Sox, believe it or not. actually, it might just seem like that because he literally has six of them, or this is his sixth, but they've all come since July 10th.
Wow. So
the Tigers did not face the White Sox in the first half of the season.
Crazy schedule.
For those who are just kind of loosely paying attention, maybe they're not Tigers or White Sox fans, like, these two teams play all the time. But he dominates them. 2.02 ERA, 1.21 whip, a little high, but the ERA is there, 4.0 record. He kind of kicks their butt. I like them. I like him there. Mariners have been hit and miss. That July, they were amazing. Half of August, they were good. Half of August, they were bad. For the White Sox start alone, I'm going to go ahead and go with Porcello, but there's also a good chance that he rolls up on the Mariners.
Yeah, I agree with this one again with Paul. And, you know, the thing people forget about Porcello, he's only 26 years old.
Yeah.
Everybody kind of views this guy as a failed prospect, but he's still at an age where a lot of pitchers are developing. And the addition of Iglesias at shortstop over Peralta, Porcello's the one pitcher who could most benefit from that change of anybody on the Tigers. So Strikeout and walk rates are good this year. Two favorable matchups. I'm going for it.
All right, Porcello's in. Hey, everybody's favorite Scotty Kazmir is at the Royals and at home against the Astros. Paul?
Can I be nerd correction guy real quick first? Diehard Tigers fan here. Porcello is only 24.
Wow. See? I should give him even more credit.
No kidding.
Yeah. He's a guy I've never given up on. And I almost jumped off a bridge when they were talking about the Tigers trading him for Luke Gregerson. No offense, Luke Gregerson. You're a fine reliever, but you're not worth Rick Porcello.
Wow, anyway, 24. That's wild.
Back to Kazmir.
Yes.
Another guy who, if you're kind of missing it, if you're just kind of doing name association of recent years, you're not in on the fact that he's actually been really good for a few months now, dating back to about mid-June. He's got a 3.18 ERA over 15 starts. 85 innings, 80 strikeouts, only 20 walks. And right there, that last number, that's the key. Walks were always this guy's problem. Even when he was good as a young guy, he always walked too many. He hasn't walked more than three in that span, and he's only walked more than two three different times. So a lot of numbers there. Easy point. He's not walking, guys. He's worth starting.
Yeah, you know, Kazmir's interesting. His overall number since the All-Star, he's had five unbelievable starts, five dominant starts. And the other five were kind of dogs, but you added up the good five were so good that makes his overall numbers very good. So, again, you're looking at favorable matchups here, a guy who on the whole is doing well. The addition of the curveballs made a big difference for him this year. So I'm with Paul. We're 5-5. We're together.
You guys are locking it down here.
Yeah.
Willie Peralta has got the Cubs at home. He's got the Cardinals at home. He's our final two-star pitcher. Paul, what do you say?
He is wily indeed. I mean, this is another guy I kind of group in there with that Dan Heron, Lance Lynn. Definitely going to go for him if I'm a little bit desperate. He faced St. Louis his last time out. He was good against them. He does have a string of three quality starts and then a five-inning, one earned before that. So for the last four starts, been pretty solid. But right before that, seven earned. He's got that dud potential. So that's why I'd be terrified if I was in big ERA and whiff chases. So I would say no to those folks who are in those tight chases. Everywhere else, I'll go ahead and go with him.
Like it.
Yeah, Peralta, 3.12 ERA in his last 15 starts. And in that stretch, he's really only had two stinkers. Paul mentioned the bomb against Cincinnati, and the other one was in Colorado. So if you're willing to give him a little bit of a pass, you know, in Colorado is always scary. Cincinnati's a very good offense. He's really been good against everybody else and showed up very well against the Cardinals, a tough offense last time. So I'd probably be a little bit more ambitious about this one than Lynn or Heron, because he's been mostly consistent for longer.
Right, in the ballparks that are a little kinder than those other ones. All right, yeah. So Pettit, Porcello, Kazmir, and Peralta, if you're not really in a dogfight about ratios for Peralta, there's your agreement, in fact, from Corey Schwartz.
Let's do it.
And Paul Sporer. That's, folks, that is huge.
Let's do this.
That is a huge check. All right, fan questions. We turn it over now to you, the fan, the person who's walking down the street listening to the
podcast on your
vociferous tones of our voice.
Device.
Whatever magic device it is. Whatever science fiction device you're listening to this on. Cincy Sports Start.
Sports Art.
Oh, Cincy Sports Art. Oh, art. Who do you see having more potential, Paul? Fantasy upside. Taiwan Walker, Archie Bradley.
Boy, I'm going to go with the guy that I'm a bit more familiar with right now. And so maybe there's a little bit of a bias there, but it is Taiwan Walker. I love this guy. I actually just got done doing a big feature on him at a news site I launched. I love this guy's stuff. It's really filthy. He's got mid-90s fastball, low-90s cutter, changeup that's evolving. It's not much right now. And then a nasty curveball. He has trouble commanding the curveball right now, so he's kind of working on that. But you're talking about a dude who just made his debut at age 20. There's a lot to like with this guy. I'm a big fan. I know that Archie Bradley's really moved up the ranks this year, so can't really go wrong, at least in terms of prospect ceiling. But for me, I'm going to go with Walker.
Yeah, and I think the key point here also is that Walker has a rotation job right now. You know, Bradley, maybe if you were looking at a dynasty league, there's an argument to be made for him. But if you're looking in a pure keeper league where the salaries go up and whatever,
yep.
Walker has a rotation job right now. Bradley doesn't have a rotation job and I think has more quality pitchers ahead of him in the food chain than does Walker. So that for me would be a big difference maker as well.
That is significant. All right. The at the Blue Jays fan needs to know, Paul, is Evan Gattis a top 12 catcher next season?
Oof. I don't know about that. I don't think... Actually, boy, it's close because we're going to lose Napoli from the ranks. Victor Martinez already was discarded from the ranks at CBS as a default. He'll be discarded from the rest. It's going to be very close. I'm going to lean and say no, but, I mean, he's not going to be much worse than I would say maybe the 13 to 16 range if he's not. So yeah. It's right there on the cusp, but I will take a firm stand and say no.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My gut reaction was the same thing. Like, come on, you know, the guy's not even a full-time player, doesn't hit for average. But then I looked at the catcher rankings, and I came up with 11 guys. If I were going to make a list of 11 guys ahead of him, and I'm just going to rattle these off. Posey, Lucroy, Rosario, Yadi Molina, Santiago Perez, Wieters, Carlos Santana, Pierzynski, who's having another good year, McCann, Wilson Ramos, and Miguel Montero. But there are guys in there that you could argue for Evan Gattis over them. So I think if you go into draft day next year and we have a clear-cut idea of what Gattis' playing time will look like, I think on the production that you would expect from every day at bats, you could put him in the top 12. McCann's going to be a free agent, I believe, at the end of this year. So is Gattis the everyday catcher? Is Christian Betancourt? Do they platoon? You know, what does the outfield situation look like? If you know that Gattis is going to get 450 at-bats next year, I think he is a top 12 guy. Maybe only 11th or 12th, but would you argue for him over Pierzynski, over Montero, who's had a tough year, over Wieters, who's had a tough year? You can make those arguments.
All right, so he's right in the cusp. He's certainly somebody to keep an eye on, as that catcher slot is so tough to fill. What do you think, Corey?
Two more. Let's do it.
What do you think about what do you think of
that? Slenesis. Slenesis.
Slenesis.
Slenesis.
The Greek god of OBP. Would you keep any one of Jose Fernandez, Matt Latos, or Shelby Miller, Paul, over Manny Machado, Josh Hamilton, Will Myers, or Matt Kemp?
I would. And I'm not a huge fan of keeping pitchers, but I would keep all three of them over Josh Hamilton. I would keep Fernandez and Latos over Myers and Kemp and Hamilton, and I keep Fernandez over my dog, and if anyone follows me on Twitter, they know I love my dog. So, yeah, Fernandez, ridiculous. But no, joking aside, really, for me, it'd be Machado, the kind of number one overall there, and then really, it's kind of a mix between the pitchers and hitters there. I wouldn't even touch Hamilton on this list, so he's completely out of place. If this were an SAT question, which of these is not like the others, Josh Hamilton's the clear winner there. And by winner, I mean loser.
Okay.
Big, big loser.
Well said.
I don't need to be here because I agree with everything Paul says.
Yeah, that's pretty well said, actually.
And good. Also, let's go ahead.
Funny. So, thanks for that. Moving on to base dealers. At base dealers, needs to know, Matt Adams or Brandon Moss rest of the season, as short as it is?
Oh, man, that's tough because there's just so much variance. What I would do in this instance is probably take a look at the schedules and try to break a tie there because there's just not going to be much difference, you know, if one plays an extra game or two, although Moss is really kind of a platoon guy. And my best buddy here, Alan Craig, I'm not sure if he's going to come back for the season, so that's a little bit damaging. That helps Adams. You know what, I'll be firm. I'll say a name. I'll say Matt Adams.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, simply put, I think Adams is the better hitter.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the better lineup, in the better ballpark. And again, Moss does sit out some against lefties. Adams might too, but I think Craig, in all likelihood, as we talked about earlier in the show, in reality is probably only going to be back for the last weekend of the season, if that. I'd take my chances with Adams.
There you go. Get the playing time. PT is king. You know what, folks? That wraps up the fan questions, which means that wraps up the show.
Or and that wraps up the season
for
of
me.
Phoners.
That's a wrap on JB for phoners.
It is. And this
interviews.
This is our last phone interview of the season. So, Paul, this is your last chance of all of our guests to do shameless plugs.
This is our favorite time of the show. Will you just tell us where and when and how we can find all of your intellectual stylings?
All right. Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Spore. That's S-P-O-R-E-R. That's going to be the best, easiest way. I mentioned that I launched a new site. It's called painttheblack.com. Believe it or not, just to floor everybody, it's all about pitching. 100%. So I recently launched that. It's not even a month old yet. Been having a great time with it so far. Did some stuff on, I mentioned Taiwan Walker, the Atlanta Braves playoff rotation. So go ahead and check that out. You can take a look at a few things, decide if it's for you or not. I think it will be. Also, PaulSlore.com. I'm very vain. I have my own name website. You can go ahead and check out some stuff there. Although, with the new website and with the other jobs, PulseWar.com is not the central hub of awesomeness that it used to be. So I would say just follow me on Twitter, Paint the Black, Baseball Perspectives, RotoWire.com. And if you do play daily leagues and you want to know about pitchers, RotoGrinders.com as well.
There you go.
Wow, guys, everywhere.
You are working it.
Ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous.
Omnipresent.
I'm very important. Or what is it? What is the Anchorman line? My apartment smells of rich mahogany. Many leather-bound books. I'm not quoting it properly, but I'm trying to get
it. It works. It works.
We get it. We understand. Well, Paul, for all of us here, thanks for being with us and wrapping up the season so eloquently.
Thank you guys for having me on. You know, to be kind of the nerd, schmoozer guy. I listen all the time, so it's really, really fun to actually be on here now, considering that I've been a listener all the way back in the internet, days of Fantasy 411. It's been a long time staple for me, and of course I met Corey in person, so I consider you a friend. Thanks guys so much for having me on.
Our pleasure, and you know, just to return the favor, I'm a faithful reader of the Pitching Guide every year. I don't always agree with your assessments, but I like reasoned arguments.
Yes,
and I definitely think that's a great resource. So I look forward to reading more of your stuff. Thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks, guys.
Okay,
that's Paul Sporer, folks. Of all those things, a great way to find him.
Wow.
Yeah, he's working.
Busy guy.
I feel like I should probably go do some work.
Yeah, see, I was just gonna say, it makes me feel pretty lazy.
I'm a little bit a little slow.
I'm just with MLB.com.
So let me just summarize. That's it for me. That's a wrap on JB, everybody. Have a great rest of your run. Win your leagues and then send us the proceeds. That's part of the deal, right?
Yeah, absolutely. 10% right off the top.
We know that, right?
Yep.
Just by listening. That's in the terms and licensing agreement.
If you download this podcast.
Oh, man. There are lawyers on the corner office right now whose ears have just started to sear.
Yeah, they just stood up and like kind of peeked over the cubicle wall. Like, what was that?
It's like, what are you, prairie dogs? Your prairie dog lawyers just going like, you said what? Don't say that. That's not funny. That's a legal thing.
It's like
don't say that.
The gopher in Caddyshack just peered his head out of the hole.
He's like, oh, great. We just lost money. All right, folks, enjoy it. Go get it. Go win your title. And if you didn't win it, there's always next year, because that's what we're looking forward to. For Corey Schwartz, I'm JB, and my can of club soda. Enjoy your day.